I'll just ask you generally, because it's still early days in the off season for baseball, but have you been able to detect any trends yet that might be specifically related to where baseball finds itself in the, you know, in the pandemic?
I think, well, first of all, pleasure always talking to you, Jeff and Stephen. I think a lot of people, when they're in, I always view baseball as an ocean, and I always tell people, don't get caught up in the waves. We've got a big, beautiful ocean. It's a continuum that will continue. It always has and always will. It's a continuum that requires talent. And with each wave comes an opportunity, and it also requires an intellectual path that normally is different from those of the many for those who succeed. And I think in this process that you're looking at talent that is very capable of making a position for championship play different for some organizations and for others not. And so and that's true of every season, frankly. So when we look at what baseball needs right now is that we've gone through a 2-month performance element where over 60 something players, pitchers were on the injured list. We have a deficit in every organization for pitching. Some vastly greater than others. We're going to have even our most steadfast stars, veteran pitchers, go from 80 innings to a needed 180 to 200. And that is going to cause issues as well. So we have got to rebridge the game, and it's going to be done by creating scenarios where it involves a larger group of pitching to allow for a full season to be played with limited health risk. And so I think the focus of every organization has to be how we build those bridges, how we protect the assets that we have under contract, and also what we do with rosters and roster amounts to allow for protection of the players in the current and future.
To continue your analogy, expand on it. Like COVID's a bit of a rogue wave, though, too, isn't it, Scott? Like this is not a part of a pattern that we have ever seen before. And I wonder about the uncertainty in terms of the economic uncertainty in general that goes with it, but the specific uncertainty in baseball in terms of revenue streams over. Let's hope for it's just for the next season. Beyond what we've already seen, how do you think that will disrupt the market? Does it disrupt the market? You know, obviously, if you're teams that are thinking beyond 2021, but the impact of 2020 on the business of baseball, the potential impact in 2021, and on the other related businesses that owners might be involved in as well, is that rogue wave going to disrupt the marketplace this winter?
Well, the difference is that owners know if they play 162 games this year, they're going to get the full amount of money they get from their regional networks and from from a local amount. That wasn't true in 2020. So the requirement of games to be played is now something that generates revenue, is where it was something that was not a factor in 2020. So therefore, you're seeing a commissioner that is very vigilant about getting fans in the ballpark and playing games, where before they tried to limit games because they knew they could have the postseason and limit the cost of players, knowing that their TV contract revenues were guaranteed to them for 20. But those obligations that they made to get that are the playing of games going forward. Also, with the advancement of the vaccines and the multiple companies involved and the and such. We're also going to have hockey and basketball that will precede baseball to allow us, again, more information on how to proceed before our season starts to give everyone, I think, greater comfort on the ability to execute a season in a normal fashion. But for me, the real concern beyond is to effectively, you know, we have billions of dollars invested in talent currently, and we have talent that is available to contract that is needed and to really produce championship play. And to do all that, you're going to have rules, and you're also going to have systems that are very different than what we've dealt with in the normal baseball season. So how we build that bridge to transition into a full season from a partial season, to me, is most important. And what you do in acquiring the talent and preserving the talent you have and doing that is really going to be a key to what clubs are available to win next year, because the durability of these pitchers and the health of the pitchers are going to be the key to fashionably presenting a club that has the ability to go an additional month of play to win a championship.
Scott, of course, as part of the issues we're dealing with here with the pandemic, there's the issue of the Canadian border, and it remains closed, and I'm using air quotes around closed, but there's certainly concern as to whether or not professional sports teams in Canada at this point, NHL teams and NBA teams in particular, will be allowed to play games here. So obviously we don't know about the Blue Jays at this point, whether or not they'll be allowed to play games in Canada. As an agent, would that be an issue for you in dealing with, you know, in talking to a team? I mean, literally not being able to tell your guy that this is where the team is going to be playing this year? Or do you think that because we've gone through half a season, players might be a little more open to taking a longer term picture, to simply saying, you know what, or taking a longer term view, as opposed to saying, I just don't want to go to Toronto because they might be playing in Buffalo?
I think it would depend on the player, because if you're talking about a short term commitment, that might be more of an issue because you're not getting a city that is really very coveted and desired by many players, because Toronto's it's just a great city to live in and play in. And frankly, far different than Buffalo. Yes.
Yes.
So the idea of that, I think, would be more impactful. Long term, I think there is no one that faults the Canadian government for protecting their citizenry and doing so with an application that goes well beyond, you know, sport. And but with the resolution of that, they understand that, you know, I think everybody in the world sees what's going on pharmacologically and with the development and immunologically with the systems of the vaccine and the promise and the early testing, that we're a resolution is on the rise, and I think that we have more definition to that. So for players looking long term with the Blue Jays, I would say no. I think they're going to look at the organization, they're going to look at the promise of what they've built, and how that particular player fits into that that scenario, and of course, you know, how the Blue Jays compete for with the other markets for the talent available.
So, speaking of that, you know, obviously the Jays made a splash last offseason signing one of your clients, and being players in more serious players in free agency than they've been in some years. What is your sense of their posture heading into, or their position in this current offseason, Scott? They're certainly sending out signals about being aggressive on multiple fronts with multiple in multiple positions with multiple players. What are you picking up in terms of the Jays in this offseason?
No, I think the Jays are again what I'd always hope that the Blue Jays should and could be, and that is that they're going to be one of the organizations that sits atop the aggressive markets in baseball. You know, they're in a definite phase where I think they have the lamp, and now they're looking for the light bulb, and in signing Ryu, they brought in a leader. They brought in someone who can manage a top tier of the rotation position. It's clear they needed more, but it's certainly someone who demonstrated that he can guide the club and be highly competitive with the other ones and twos that the other teams in the division and the league offer. So that clarity did not exist. Also, with the evidence that they've got, you know, four or five core players that really allow them to be offensively competitive. It's you know, there are a lot of organizations that can't say that. So it's something where we're adding frosting to that cake, I think, is something that the Blue Jays have a real design on going forward.
I mean, you've got a couple of clients that would be pretty good frosting from where I stand. James Paxton, of course, but also Jackie Bradley Jr. And the reason, you know, I don't know how specific you want to get, Scott, but it seems to me that I have heard not just the Blue Jays, I've heard more teams talk about run prevention in the last 2 years than I've heard in a while. And I don't know if that's because our understanding of defensive analytics is better or what, but I certainly look at Jackie Bradley Jr. as a guy who could help a bunch of teams.
You know, sometimes, Jeff, Steven, I know nothing about other sports other than Pete Carroll is my college roommate, and I root for the Seahawks, and I go, you know, why don't they? And he goes, just shut up. and I go, you know, in other words, he's right. What do I know? And I watched the NBA draft, and they were talking about how big men, the 7'2" guy, is no longer in the landscape of rarity, that they're more, the game has changed. And I'm going, what are they talking about? The game's changed. Well, baseball has changed too. Is that it's changed in the idea that when you do not have the pitching to win, you've got to figure out a way to become competitive by reducing runs in a different way and run prevention. And like Jackie Bradley has become something of a jewel of free agency because this turn of events in the game and how it's perceived is become something that a lot of clubs have utilized to be successful that were unexpectedly successful.
Mm-hmm.
And Tampa Bay, for example, has done that. Now, the reality of it is that you've got to have the arms and the athletes because to stay in the league for 6 years, you know, like Jackie Bradley also brings with him an over 800 OPS.
Sure. Yeah.
How many center fielders do you know are Gold Glove caliber that have that? And you can't count three or four in the game that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something where, you know, when Tampa Bay signed Kaymeyer, they have a guy with a 730 OPS who they're signed for $55 million and said, why? Because he helps us win. And all of a sudden that formulation is advancing. It's been seen. It's understood. It's there, you know. And look, everybody in Canada has always loved maple cake. So it's
yes,
no doubt. So and look, you need guys who can win in the postseason. And when you have players who can throw 170 innings and pitch and win big games for you, that's a rarity. And particularly when they're left-handed, so you just can't find them. You can find guys that can give you serviceable innings and do things, but who can win the big game? And the great thing about Pax's time in New York was that, you know, he had to win that big game, And he beat the Astros in New York City and won a big game and stood up in the postseason and has shown he can do that. And if you want to win, you need those types of players.
Scott, while we got you here, Aaron Sanchez is one of your clients. He's coming off a tough injury. I know he's been thrown. He threw for teams, and he's looking to get back in 2021. How's Aaron doing? What's the level of interest in him? I think a lot of us always thought he'd be he was a top of the rotation guy, but he did have some success in the bullpen in Toronto as well. Do teams look at him strictly as a starting pitcher at this stage?
Aaron's really, he just had a second child, by the way. He's matured. His bullpens have been just really out of sight. He is really a guy that has had the full amount of time, the 14 months to recuperate and get himself strong. And the great thing about today is you can put cameras on them and they give you, more analytic dynamics than just, velocity. And his spin rates have been extraordinary. And so we are really looking forward to Aaron returning to the levels he enjoyed. But he's healthy and doing well.
Scott, it was really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Stay safe, be well, and we look forward to chatting again.
Well, Jeff, Stephen, I can't wait to the day that I can be back in Toronto, because that would mean a lot for all of us about how we're doing with this pandemic.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to miss, too? I'm going to miss seeing you at the winter meetings and that media availability, which is the highlight of the winter meetings. So,
I'm not going to miss that so much.
All right, my friend.
I'll just enjoy doing calls with you guys.
All righty. Stay safe and be well. Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.